Okay, so I'm presenting on behalf of Dr. Mandy Hill, who unfortunately was not able to attend, and also Dr. Gloria Okugu, who's completing her residency. Okay, so I was a junior in undergrad, pre-med major, and super excited of looking forward to what my future held. In a romantic relationship with the guy I absolutely adored. We dated for about 6 months before we became sexually active, and being a pre-med major, very aware of health and protecting myself, and so I was on birth control pills and also utilizing condoms because, again, I'm a pre-med major. I understand health. So you can understand my disappointment, my anger, my confusion to be in my gynecologist's office and to be told that I have HPV. Now, I don't look like the risk factors of the promiscuous woman with multiple partners and, you know, utilizing drugs or alcohol or not utilizing condoms. But here I am with this diagnosis. Now, this isn't my story. This is the story of Dr. Hill's best friend. But this is the story of a woman that we know. You know, research often identifies this woman, this at-risk woman. And I'm so glad these women, my panelists, went before me because they spoke about condom use, using the pill, being promiscuous or not being promiscuous, but still being at risk for these diseases. So it's definitely important to know that the woman who's at risk looks very different than the woman that's identified in the literature. Those women who are at risk look like us. They have PhDs, they have MDs, they're married, they're in monogamous relationships, yet they're still at risk. Okay, so I have nothing to disclose. And so why vaccinate? Just because of that reason, using condoms isn't enough. And so traditional methods, here it is, a woman, Dr. Hill's friend, an advocate for her own health, pre-med, oh my goodness, she knows about health. Use the condom. Two sexual acts in the same day. Two different condoms. Same person. But still, here she is that she has HPV. We also know the numbers. This is an audience. You guys know this, these numbers. That in the U.S., 80 million, one in four, are infected with at least one strand of HPV. That approximately 2 million new cases annually, with 600,000 calls by HPV. The most prevalent being HPV 16 and 18, with 6 and 11 causing genital warts and reoccurrent respiratory polymatosis in the throat, genital warts in the throat. Okay. So this information from the Center of Disease Control looked at U.S. cancers attributed to HPV in the different areas in the body, and we see cervical at 96% probably caused by HPV. So again, why vaccinate? So here, this source is from the President's Cancer Panel, the National Cancer Advisory Board, and they were looking at ways to increase vaccination. And some of those were strong recommendation for HPV vaccination, just like how my colleague here, my panelist, spoke about utilizing our MDs, our clinicians, and also promoting and facilitating HPV vaccination in additional settings outside of the OBGYN, and then that's where our study comes in because we are associated with an emergency department in Houston. So some of the goals still with the panel is to reduce missed clinical opportunities and then also to maximize access to HPV vaccine. And that's what our study wanted to do is we actually surveyed, I'm getting into that, I'm ahead of myself, sorry guys. So again, so I'm building up to why. Why do we need to vaccinate in the ED setting? And so this is some of the support. Objective 1.2, providers should encourage HPV. Objective 3.1, promote and facilitate vaccination outside of the medical home. So ED physicians would support incorporating HPV, this is what some research has shown, in specialties other than family medicine and OBGYN. And then the ED is the National Public Health Safety Net. And the physician immunization practices are associated with their attitudes about vaccine. Again, what our panelists spoke about, the physician's attitudes definitely determine whether they would recommend or not. So the purpose of our study was to assess the attitudes of our faculty and our residents about their willingness to encourage HPV vaccine in the ED setting. We are kind of unique at UT because we have access to two hospitals, a public hospital and a private hospital. All of our population is from a clinical setting. So our EDs are the people who participated in our survey board certified. Our faculty completed the survey in their monthly faculty meeting. Our residents have weekly resident meeting. 10 items, clicker, response rate 93.9. It took about 10 minutes. So our residents and faculty had a similar trends with these areas. They were comfortable with vaccine administration, comfortable targeting high-risk women, the belief that the HPV vaccine can prevent genital warts. They both believe that the time for discussing vaccine is a barrier in the ED. And also inability to assess the completion of the series in an ED setting. So, hey, they get series one here. How can we ensure they get the other two? They differed, our faculty and residents differed in terms of their belief that HPV vaccine can prevent cervical cancer. We see the difference between our residents and our faculty. That testing for HPV prior to HPV vaccination, there's a difference there as well. And the difference between our residents and our faculty, the necessary to discuss the sexual health of the patient before recommending the vaccine. And also they differed, would they recommend vaccine to age-eligible patients? And we see our residents were more willing than our seasoned faculty. So using ANOVA, we see that the faculty is comfortable targeting high-risk women, and that they also believe that the reimbursement, again, that is a barrier for them. How will we get reimbursed for this service? And in our bivariate, both the faculty comfort again with the high-risk women. So the discussion. So this is a contribution to the literature, and that vaccine uptake, again, there's this correlation between the comfort level of our physicians and their willingness to recommend it in the ED setting. Our faculty and our residents were comfortable targeting risk age-eligible women, and that the ED is a safety net for the community, that we see so many different people in the ED setting, and it's a nice cross-sectional view of our community. It's important that the ED physicians have buy-in with anything else that's given in the emergency room. If our physicians have these barriers, will they recommend it to their patient who comes there? Let's see. That the ED setting is a preventative, is a place that we can offer preventative services, it's a nice catchment area, and especially in our public health hospitals, some of the wait times can be anywhere from 6 to 12 hours in LBJ. And so this is a population in terms of educating the population that this is a good place that we could do that. The barrier is still reimbursement, and so looking at possibly providing funding, if some other entity could provide funding, that this could be offered in the ED setting, that would reduce one of the barriers as well. And then maybe even looking at some other resources, that if the physicians, as the first panelist spoke about, that is limited time for them to actually speak about this service with patients, maybe nurses, or maybe there's a health educator. What other resources do we have in the ED that can provide this information to women? Okay. So the limitations is that we had a small sample size, self-reported. We would like to expand this to include the other hospitals, other ED settings in Houston, to see what their faculty and residents, their opinions are, their thoughts are. To apply for CPRIT preventative service funding, so maybe that's a way that we can add funding for the vaccine within the ED setting. And then maybe to even apply for funding to train our faculty and our residents, again, as far as the importance of vaccinating this population. And so these are the references, and Dr. Hill is very excited that this has been accepted for publication in the Human Vaccine and Immunotherapies. It was accepted in October. So if there's any questions, you can definitely contact Dr. Hill. And if you want a copy of the article, email us, and we'll send it to you.
Yes.